Oh, we just got an alert. We're filming a podcast today.
Oh, we are? Tight, dude. Sick. Let's do that. Should we?
Let's do it. Let's do it. Welcome to Head Games, the science and psychology of sports. My name is Dr. Brett Levine, joined as always by Dr. Ben Rosenberg. Bit of a heavier topic today. Everything going on with the George Floyd protests, we thought it was a good opportunity to talk about sports, the influence of professional sports on everything that's going on. So we're going to cover two topics today in large part. Number one, we're going to really dive a little bit deeper on Colin Kaepernick and his kneeling that he was doing during the national anthem back in 2016. And Ben wrote a banger of an article on Psychology Today about it. So we're going to dig a little bit deeper into that. And we'll also talk about the Drew Brees apology and whether the apology is working or not, and possibly why it was or was not working, and maybe draw some comparisons to the Houston Astros, who also have done some apologizing recently. Yikes.
Gotta bring them up again. Jesus.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're not going to get a full season with fans being able to boo them, so we should take every chance we get.
I know, they're kind of getting off fucking easy on that, right? Like,
they really are.
That really sucks. Like, they're not going to get it. Guys aren't going to be able to hit them as many times in games. Fans aren't going to just be able to absolutely shit on them as much. It's kind of lame. Yeah. Like, we should carry it into next year, hopefully, if we get a full season.
I think it will. All right. Well, before we get started, a quick shout out to one of our colleagues, Joan Ryan. She is a sports author. She wrote a book previously on the Molina brothers, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. And she's been working on this book on team chemistry for a few years at least now. And
like a decade or something on and off is what I read.
Is that what? Yeah. Man. She's put a ton of work into this. She's great. She's great at what she does. She has a ton of connections. She has great interviews. She interviewed you, right? She interviewed me. Not that I'm anything to write home about. I was interviewed for the book, but yeah, this thing was a lot of work for her. She was on the front page of the San Francisco Chronicle sports section. I think it was last week, or some days ago.
Last weekend, I think. Yeah,
something like that. The title of the book is called "Intangibles: Unlocking the Science and Soul of Team Chemistry." This is why we're here, I think, in large part. Like, the point of this podcast is to educate and to move sports psychology forward as much as we can, and to, the rising tide will lift all boats. And so when we see our colleagues putting out work like this, yeah, I think this is tremendous. It's, like I said, I think you as an educator too, I think this is great to see. The whole field of sports psychology has really benefited when we have, you know, big events like this, like books, or we have conferences, or we see some sort of that, you know, that influence taking part in the applied realm or with teams. So this is just great. And we want to give a nod to her and say congrats on the new book.
And the excerpts that I've read online look awesome. So I'm looking forward to getting it and actually getting a chance to dive in a little bit, being so close to what both you and I are passionate about and interested in.
Yep. Yep. And also, I want to pay some respects to another late author who passed away recently, Lonnie Wheeler. And I think he was pretty close with a lot of people in the Reds organization. And he wrote a book also along the lines of team chemistry. And I read it this came out a while ago. And he included a lot of his intangible, the subtle things that win baseball games. Cool. And condolences to him. And thinking about the authors and the people that do this work that sort of move everything forward, respects to him. And we'll keep doing what we're doing. And these people like Lonnie and Joan, who put their work out there, really influence what we do. And we can just keep the ball rolling. I think that's the idea. And benefit others as we try and move the field forward. So along these cheerful lines, first topic for you, Ben, first question. So back in, just as a quick refresher for those that might not know, Colin Kaepernick, who was then the quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers back in 2016, was drawing a lot of attention. He wanted to draw attention to the racial injustice and police brutality against Black men by kneeling during the national anthem. And a few of his teammates joined him along the way, especially as things started catching up, or as things sort of moved forward. A lot of other teams were, joining, like, symbolically. They were also kneeling, things like that. There were people that were for what he was doing. There were people against what he was doing, most notably the president, the vice president, who weren't too fond of it. His name is being conjured a lot now. With everything going on with George Floyd, people are talking a lot about Colin Kaepernick. He's a professional athlete with this incredible podium. And a lot of people are saying he was the trendsetter. He was the guy that sort of sparked all of this. And my question to you, as a sports psychologist, do we give Colin Kaepernick credit? Does he deserve all the credit? Does he deserve some of the credit for the weight, or for the, the depth of how far Black Lives Matter has come, and for the change that's currently going on in the United States?
I mean, the short answer, at least from my perspective as a social psychologist, is yes, absolutely. He deserves some credit for the gained popularity that BLM has seen in the years since he started kneeling. Certainly caveat that by saying there's no way for us to attribute this fully to him, right? And I don't think it would be incorrect to try to do so. Obviously, the movement existed well before Colin Kaepernick started kneeling. It's going to continue to exist, hopefully, or maybe it'll stop needing to exist, but hopefully it'll continue to exist for a while after his movement began. So I think that's the major caveat, but absolutely, I would say he played a role in what we're seeing now, which is this enormous popularity and these enormously diverse protests that we're seeing.
Not to get too fancy, but like, what's the mechanism behind this? Like, he's, I think he was a pretty popular player. He's a quarterback for a decent team. What does it take to start movements like this? Is it, somebody with a platform can do something, sort of thought provoking and just spark a movement, or like, what's, how does it work?
So I think that's a really good question. And there's some pretty clear hints as to what might be happening in the social psych literature. Particularly, there's this idea called minority influence that was coined by a French social psychologist many years ago. And the sort of long and short of it is that there are ways for a group that doesn't have power, so in this case, the minority, to influence the rest of people, the majority. And that's sort of counter to what we typically see happen, where most of the time social change happens kind of top down, right? Like, the majority who has power sets the stage, they set the norms, and everybody wants to live up to those kind of norms that they've prescribed. And if you don't, they sort of rely on like punishment, basically, to get people to sort of fall in line. So there are times, like I think we're seeing now, when a minority group that doesn't have power, by being consistent, by really having a strong message, and saying it sort of over and over and over again, like, watch, listen to us, listen to us, listen to us, can slowly influence those people in the majority to first kind of just take note, right? I don't think you're going to see this immediate change, and we haven't. It's been a progression. To take note of what they're saying, what their message is, and then over time, potentially over the years, if the minority keeps voicing their concerns, saying their message in the same way, you might see the majority start to like internalize the message a little bit that the minority is putting out there. And I think we're seeing some of that, right? Like, Kaepernick had this platform. He was one of the people to really, who had a big audience, who had the majority watching him start talking about some of this stuff. And initially the reception was kind of lukewarm, right? As you said at the beginning, like, a lot of people are like, who the fuck is this guy? Like, what's he doing? He's disrespecting the flag, all this stuff, right? That had nothing to do with what he was talking about. But that's the sort of pushback that the minority often gets right off the bat.
From the majority, from the norm. That's just like, exactly. No, don't do that.
All exactly. Right. From the majority sort of pushing back, saying like, no, this isn't what we do, right? And you heard people saying that, like, we stand up, we put our hands over our hearts. When the
yeah, national we're going to talk about playing. That guy.
yeah. When the national anthem's playing. And so people, I don't want to say understandably, because I disagree with the people who said this, but understandably from the perspective of majority minority, people push back against this minority viewpoint. And so he was sort of moved to the wayside, right? He kind of got, for lack of a better word, blackballed from the NFL. But he kept on it, right? No matter his employment status in the league, he kept on it. He kept talking about this stuff. He got a big contract with Nike. He's been out there promoting BLM, promoting his viewpoint about injustice and his fight for getting rid of police brutality and injustice, which is hopefully something that most people can get behind. And we've seen that, right? It's the pushback has slowly deteriorated. It's slowly gotten less and less to the point where now we're seeing polls showing that like close to 80% of people support equality and believe that there is systemic inequality in the country, right? And like that's insane. That's a huge number of Americans to agree on something.
Right. I think previously you said 80% is crazy. I couldn't get 80% of people to believe that the sky was blue.
Yeah, I mean, literally, I stand by that statement. I mean, I think that is the ceiling of how many Americans you could get to agree on any concept.
So you're saying we're at the top. This is it. We're not going to get any more support.
I mean, it'd be awesome if it got to 100%, but, and I don't say that that's the ceiling to be flippant about it and say like, you're never going to change these people's minds. But, to suggest that this is really awesome that this many people support the movement and sort of starting to gain an understanding of what's been happening in systemically for hundreds of years. And you saw also, I think, another piece of evidence to support this thinking. You've seen these protests that are happening in far-flung places where you wouldn't typically see protests for Black Lives Matter, right? Like in small suburbs, places that are primarily white. You're seeing a lot more white participation in these protests. And again, I think that's an indicator that this message is starting to reach more people. And again, suggesting that something's happening here. There is some minority influence that's going on here. The minority viewpoint is starting to become the majority, hopefully.
And it sounds like it. I was going to say, if 80% agrees with it, is that now the norm? Are we now looking at the norm?
I mean, it's tough to say, right? Like the questions on the surveys that I've seen, the national surveys that I've seen, haven't asked specifically about like support for Black Lives Matter, right? So we're sort of talking about a couple different things. We're talking on one hand about recognition that there is inequality and recognition that we need to do something about it. And then we're talking about that we do have data for, and we're talking about something separate, support for BLM, that there's not, at least that I have been able to find data for yet. So it's hard to say like, yes, this has happened, but I think we're at least on our way there. The minorities made certainly a lot of headway in pushing their viewpoint on the majority. And I think if it hasn't happened already, that it will happen soon. That as you're seeing many, many people really have their minds changed by this movement. And once it does become the majority viewpoint, whether it's support for Black Lives Matter or understanding that there's systemic prejudice and systemic racism, that is when you'll most likely see things start to change for real.
Yeah. Well, referring to someone who's probably a new supporter of the Black Lives Matter movement, the quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, Drew Brees is certainly a character in all of this. So back in 2016, when Colin Kaepernick was kneeling during the national anthem, he was pretty critical of him. He was like, no. He was in the other camp saying, when you play the national anthem, you know, you stand up and you put your hand over your heart. And I think he's a big supporter of the military, and to him, the national anthem is connected to the military. And I think that was the root of what he said. And I think similar to Cap, like, he got pushback, he got support, et cetera, et cetera. During this now George Floyd protesting, he was being interviewed by Yahoo Finance for some reason.
First of all, what the fuck is Drew Brees doing on Yahoo Finance?
I don't know.
He's probably got a lot of money. What is Yahoo Finance in the first place?
Is Yahoo still around? I guess Yahoo's still around.
Honestly, I only know Yahoo because of fantasy football. Like, yeah, that is literally the only reason to go there. Like,
yeah, they're going to be the next AOL. Bye bye.
See ya. You've got mail. Like, what?
Well, they're trying to save themselves by interviewing Drew Brees. And when Drew Brees comes on, most recently, and they, I guess they were trying to like provoke him, but yeah, they asked him the same question. They said, well, you know, what do you think, again, during the national anthem this season, if players are going to be protesting it and taking a knee? And he says the same thing again. You know, I guess give the guy credit for being consistent. He says, you stand up and you put your hand over your heart. And the whiplash he received this time, he just got slammed. Dude,
he got crushed. It was immediate, too.
There was a fuck Drew Brees chant in New Orleans after the interview. One of his players, Malcolm Jenkins, told him to shut the fuck up. His wide receiver, one of the best wide receivers in the league, Michael Thomas, called him out and just said, you know, stay out of this. It was bad.
Dude, and, for perspective, this is unheard of, right? Like, I have two good buddies that live in New Orleans. They grew up there. They're New Orleans through and through. One of them has a fucking Fleur de Lis tattooed on his calf, right? Like, these guys love Drew Brees. They love New Orleans. And when this happened, we're on a text thread. And when this happened, they're just like, Drew, what? They're both white guys, by the way. Drew, what are you doing? And I mean, it just happened immediately. And if a city, no city was less likely to turn on somebody than New Orleans was on Drew Brees. And to see the reaction and how swift it was, how bad it was.
Maybe we've reached the norm. Maybe that's the real indicator.
Maybe you're right.
Yeah. So he flips basically. And then he's called out for flipping, most notably by the president. And then he doubles down and he makes a video about it. And he says, no, like I was wrong. You know, I was insensitive and I missed the mark. So he's doubled down on it. He turned quickly, and I guess he's the newest member of the Black Lives Matter movement, but it's not, you know, as two white guys, it's not our place to say whether we accept or we don't accept this apology. Yeah. And I think people can take either side of it and say, I take him at his word or I don't. But I think the question is like, well, here's someone who essentially opposes the movement, right? And then changes their mind. Maybe they're educated, right? Maybe they learned about something, changed their mind, and doubles down and says, no, I'm for it. Like, I was wrong. Has a decent apology. Why aren't people taking him at his word? Why are people still skeptical when here he is being very public about it and being, you know, apologizing profusely? What's missing here?
I mean, one thing that I heard on, I mean, I don't honestly remember the source, but I think it was an African-American player talking about why he thought people might not have accepted this seemingly good apology, which we can talk about in a second, was that it seemed like he didn't get it, right? Like he was saying all the right things, like, oh, like I'm a supporter, like this, I didn't mean what I said, or I understand now. But it was almost like he understood too quickly, right? Like, and when we're talking about difficult, super fraught issues like race relations in America, as a white person who certainly doesn't claim to fully get it, but I'm trying to understand and trying to get it, he seemingly went from 0 to 100, right? Like, I'm fucking clueless making this statement on Yahoo Finance to now I'm making an appearance like I get it, right? Like I'm good now. Like we should be good. And I think that was part of the disconnect that was
so just like the flip, people. You think just threw people off.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You wrote an article on this. I think it was our first article on Psychology Today.
Yeah.
By the way, check us out there. Head Games on Psychology Today. The first article was about the Astros and their series of apologies or non-apologies.
Yeah.
Essentially, though, there's a playbook for this, right? Mm-hmm. There's a right way of doing it according to the literature, mm-hmm. and there's a wrong way of doing it. So quickly, I mean, you want to just run down, like, what Drew Brees did or didn't do, because I think he hit a lot of these marks. So it's a little bit even more confusing as to why people aren't buying it.
Yeah, I mean, he did. The too long didn't read version is that he offered a really good apology, basically. Like, right. If there are six things that typically come up, this is according to literature, I'm not making this up, right? There's six things that typically come up in a good apology. Drew really hit five of the six, like nailed them. So he expressed regret really clearly. Yep. He explained really clearly what went wrong. He acknowledged responsibility for the fuck up really clearly. He offered to repair what happened very clearly. And he asked for forgiveness really clearly. So that's five things that he nailed. The one thing maybe he didn't quite do is to really clearly declare repentance for what had happened. But I mean, like you would think that five of the six would create a really convincing apology that everybody would say basically, okay, like you stood up, did your mea culpa, and like we're good. And as you mentioned before, that sort of wasn't exactly the case.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not an expert in literature. I don't know if you are, but that one missing piece, the declaration of repentance, is this, I mean, could it be like that's the biggest piece? Like maybe not all six pieces are as important equally. Yeah. Like maybe some of them are more important. So like maybe that one piece he's missing is the critical one. If he came out and said like, I'm going to do this, like this is how I'm going to pay for my sins. Mm-hmm. You know, we might see something different. Maybe it's advice to him now. Like, you should tweet him and be like, yo, this is what you need to do. This is the last thing you need to do. Like, you should probably fucking do it.
Yeah.
The other thing is, like, what is a little nerve-wracking about this, just in terms of, I think, in general, there was an interview on, I think it was Colin Cowherd, who was interviewing the D-lineman, Gerald McCoy, formerly of the Bucks. I remember him from Hard Knocks, which is why I was like,
Oh yeah.
He was cool. He's a cool guy. He'd been on the Bucks forever, and now he's with his home team, the Cowboys. He's from Oklahoma, but he's with the Cowboys.
And
he
went to Oklahoma, and now back with the Cowboys
So it's his home team, and maybe he can retire with them. Cool guy. Yeah. Good story. Good for him. But he's on Cowherd. He's an African American athlete, and he's saying like, I think that the topic of discussion was like, if we, in terms of Drew Brees, he apologizes and people aren't accepting it. And the idea, the thesis was really that if here's, we're seeing what we kind of want, right? We're seeing someone who opposes the movement or doesn't really understand what's going on and then becomes educated about it essentially. And then changes their ideas. And that's fine. Ideally, it should be okay to change your mind with new information.
Yeah.
And in essence, that is what Drew Brees is doing. And what's scary is we're pushing him away.
Yeah.
And again, it's not our place to say whether we accept it or not. And I think that can be on a case-to-case basis. But it is a little scary, right? Because what if he's like, you know what? I'm not accepted by this movement. I'm just going to rest on my laurels. I'm just going to go back to what I know. Or to anyone, not just Drew Brees, who wants to be educated by the movement, but feels like the barrier to entry is so tough to get through that, you know, we just keep pushing people away from what we really want, which is to educate people and to get them to support the movement, right?
Right. Well, and to acknowledge that as people are learning new things, whether it's about the systemic oppression that exists in our country or it's a new language or whatever it is, that people are going to make mistakes and people are going to screw up and they're as they learn, right? And to the extent that their heart is in the right place, like the question, I think, at least in part, that Gerald McCoy is posing is like, do they deserve a little bit of like leeway almost? Like, should we not push them away if they're clearly really trying to learn and to change? And is it unrealistic to expect that to happen just immediately?
Yeah. No, that's a good point. All right, so I think we've solved all the world's problems, right? You want to start a movement, do it big. If you want to apologize, follow these steps. I'm going to keep those in mind when I'm arguing with my wife next time.
Yeah, good luck with that, bro. Good luck. Try that when you argue with your 13-month-old. I think it'll work really well with her.
I'm not going to forget the declaration of repentance. That's apparently pretty big.
Apparently it's important.
All right, so Thanks. I mean, if anyone has any thoughts on today's show, please comment below or just leave any comments in general. Also, remember to subscribe. You can find us on Twitter. We are at HeadGamesPsych. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Dr. Brett Levine, and you can find that guy on Twitter at BD Rosenberg, PhD. Big thanks to Joshy Boy, Josh Baca, for editing and producing the show. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you guys soon.